Hi, and welcome to the Animal Training Academy podcast show, the show for animal training and behavior nerds, where I, Ryan Cartledge, interview the world's most proficient animal training and behavior geeks. We're absolutely thrilled and grateful to have you here with us today. So make sure you hit that subscribe button on whatever you're listening to this on so that you don't miss a single episode. Each episode of this show is brought to you on behalf of the ATA membership. And if you like the conversations in this episode, then you're invited to continue them with like-minded behavior nerds within the membership area, which you can find out more about at www.animaltrainingacademy.com. Once part of the ATA tribe, you'll get access to twice monthly live web classes, the back catalogue of previous web class replays, plus a huge library of videos and projects to help problem solve your training challenges. Plus, we're a sociable bunch with an exclusive private Facebook group and forum areas. It's like a Netflix social media platform for animal behavior geeks. But we will get started on today's episode where we're very lucky to be talking to one Mary Hunter. Mary earned an undergraduate degree in biology from the University of Chicago and a master's degree in behavior analysis from the University of North Texas. She runs her own animal training business, working mainly with horses and dogs, and also serves as president of the Art and Science of Animal Training, a Texas-based nonprofit that provides educational programs for professional animal trainers. In addition, Mary teaches classes in the Behavior Analysis Department at the University of North Texas as an adjunct instructor. Mary's research interests include studying the process of shaping and developing better methods for teaching both people and animals. She and Dr. Jesus Rosales Ruiz have recently published their first book, Portal, Your Portable Operant Research and Teaching Lab. So without further ado, it's my very great pleasure to welcome Mary Hunter to the show today, who is patiently waiting by. Mary, thank you so much for taking time to come and hang out with us at Animal Training Academy.
Thank you. I'm really excited to be here today on the podcast.
Yeah, I'm thrilled to have you here. Creating this episode with you is actually something I've been wanting to do for so long because I just keep seeing people sharing videos of Portal, and I've been following your blog, and I'm just thrilled that due to ATA member David Thatcher, he connected us and we've got this opportunity today. So let's dive straight in. We're going to go back a little bit. We're going to talk about Portal today. I know that you as a listener of the show are probably pretty keen to hear about this from Mary herself. But before we do, I'm really keen to learn a little bit more about what led up to the point of creating Portal 7 years ago, teaching your first class 7 years ago, and where you got started. So can you take the listeners back, Mary? Where did you first learn about positive reinforcement and share some stories from the start of your animal training and human training behavior odyssey?
All right. So let's start by going way far back. So growing up, I was always one of those horse crazy kids. However, I never had a horse of my own. You know, it was always at birthdays or Christmases, I would say, oh, can I have a horse? Can I have a pony? And my parents, unfortunately, always said no. However, I was privileged enough to get to take riding lessons growing up. So I really enjoyed that and enjoyed riding the horses and interacting with them and doing everything with them. Of course, this was all using traditional horse training methods, which is still quite common in the horse world. But then when I got into high school and college, I started getting more interested in behavior and in training. And I worked some at several barns, teaching lessons, doing barn chores. I even worked one summer in college on a guest ranch in Colorado, taking people on trail rides in the mountains. But this was all still completely traditional-based horse training methods. And so then I went to college, and like you said in the intro, I went to the University of Chicago, and I have an undergraduate degree in biology. And when I was in college, I was very, very interested in animal behavior. I took classes in ethology and vertebrate anatomy and primate behavior and animal behavior, just all the classes I could related to animals and animal behavior. But it's really interesting looking back because I knew nothing about behavior analysis at the time. I didn't even know that it existed as a field. And I thought for a long time that I either wanted to go to veterinary school or perhaps go and get a PhD in biology, studying more the ethology side of animal behavior. But when I, and so I was still riding horses at the time. And to tell you how horse crazy I was, I did my undergraduate degree in Chicago, which is a giant metropolitan area. And like most people in Chicago, I did not have a car. But there's actually quite a few barns in the suburbs of Chicago. So I would take, I rode at several different barns while I was in college, but the one I rode at for the longest, I would take one bus to the airport and then take another commuter bus for about half an hour and then walk about half a mile with my bridle and my halter over my shoulder to get to the barn so I could ride my horses, even though not my horses. I had a horse I leased, but so I could ride horses even though I was living in the middle of Chicago. So horses have always really been my passion. But then after college, I was living in Kansas for a while, and I met a woman who was going through a divorce, and she had several horses that she wasn't really doing anything with. And she told me that I could ride one of the horses for free. She wouldn't even charge me to lease the horse or anything if I would help her with chores and feeding the horses and some of the things around the property. So, and, you know, at this point, I was a fairly experienced rider. I had worked at several barns and stables. I had helped ride young horses and, you know, ride problem horses. And I thought I knew my way around horses. And I thought I knew at least a little bit about training. So this little mare that she told me I could ride was named Casey Jane. And she was a little bay quarter horse mare. And So I showed up and, you know, I would do feed the horses and do the barn chores. And then I would go out into the pasture and catch Casey Jane and then bring her back to the barn, saddle her up, and then we'd go riding. And I probably did this a handful of times, and no one else was riding this horse at the time. And then the horse started to realize that when I showed up and when I came into the pasture, she was going to have to go riding and she was going to have to work. And so she got where she didn't want anything to do with me. So I would come into the pasture and she would start walking towards the other side of the pasture. And so I would have to follow after her to go catch her. And it would take me maybe 10 minutes of walking around the pasture before I could catch her. And then it would take me 20 minutes of walking around the pasture before I could catch her. And as we went on, pretty soon, it was taking me an hour to catch her. And then it got to the point where I couldn't catch her at all. And at this point, you know, I started doing some of the things. Well, I had been trying some of the things that traditional horse people will tell you to do. You know, I hide the halter behind my back and try to lure her with a carrot or a bucket of grain or something. But she was pretty smart. She was on to me. So then I had a problem. I had this horse I could ride, but I couldn't catch her. So I couldn't ride her or do anything with her. I went through a period of time for a while where I could trick her into letting me catch her, but then even it got where I couldn't trick her at all. And then it really came, the worst it got was the woman who owned the horse, her boyfriend was out at the property one day watching me follow this horse around the pasture trying to catch it, and he felt bad for me. So he said, "Why don't we get a bucket of grain and we'll lure her out of the pasture, across the barnyard, into this little pen that was about 15 feet by 20 feet or so. And then it'll be easy for you to corner her and catch her. So we did that, and I was able to catch her. And then the next day I did that, and I was able to catch her. And then the third day I did that, she jumped over the fence to get away from me. So it really took all the way up to that point for me to really get the wake-up call of this horse doesn't like me, which is kind of a humbling experience to realize that this animal that you're doing things with and that you're wanting to ride and wanting to interact with doesn't really actually want anything in the world to do with you. And it was interesting because at the time, if it had been a different situation, I might have just given up and said, there's nothing I can do with this horse. This horse is impossible. This is a bad horse. I'm just going to go find another horse to ride. But I was reading, I was actually at the time reading Karen Pryor's Don't Shoot the Dog, which I know is the way many people have found clicker training and positive reinforcement training. So I was reading Don't Shoot the Dog, and I didn't really know anything about clicker training or positive reinforcement training, but it sounded kind of interesting. And at this point, I was kind of out of options. So I decided, you know what, I'll give this a try. And it was a slow process at first because I had to just go for several weeks and on my visits, just kind of sit in the pasture and let the horse get comfortable approaching me and work through that again. But then once I got where I could get close to her, I started clicker training her and introducing her to targeting and just teaching her simple things. And still at this point, I was very much combining it with the more traditional training, which I knew, but it was amazing to see the transformation that happened with this little horse. Over the period of just a couple of months, I went from having a horse that I would show up and she would turn and run away from me to having a horse that I would show up and she was running towards me because she was eager to interact and eager to play with me and to do clicker training. And that's such a powerful experience where when just over the period of a short amount of time, you can see an animal completely transform and completely turn themselves around. And you realize it's because you've changed your own behavior and you've changed how you're interacting with the animal. So that really opened my eyes to, you know what, maybe there's something to this clicker training stuff. Maybe I should look into this and explore how to use this in more ways and in more depth. That's what started me on my clicker training, positive reinforcement training journey.
Yeah, similar to me, except mine was an eagle flying at me with talons in my face, changing to sitting on the perch calmly whilst I approached it. So this was in Kansas, and where was Kansas in relation? Have I got that right? Casey Jane was in Kansas.
I was in Kansas.
Where was Kansas in relation to you starting your master's at the University of Texas? Was that
right? Yeah. So I was in Kansas for about half a year or so, and then I'm originally from the Dallas area, the North Texas area. So then I had moved back to North Texas, and I had still kind of been thinking I might go do a PhD in biology. I still really didn't know that much about behavior analysis, but I had actually through Karen Pryor's website, I had seen some of the research that was going on at the University of North Texas. So the trailer loading study that Dr. Jesus Rosales Ruiz and one of his graduate students had done, which I, you know, given my interest in horses, I had found that really interesting that, hey, they're using clicker training to get horses who won't go onto trailers. And not only are they doing this, but it's published in an academic journal. You know, how cool is that? And they were doing some other projects at the time too. I don't remember exactly what the other ones were, but I had read some of these projects on Karen Pryor's website, and you know, hey, this is in North Texas. It's kind of in my backyard. So I was back in North Texas and I was working part-time. But then I thought, you know what, I'll just go take a couple of classes up in the behavior analysis department at UNT just to see what this behavior analysis stuff is about. And see if maybe this might be a direction worth pursuing. So I went and took a couple classes in the department, and then I went, hey, you know what? Actually, this is really, really cool stuff. I definitely want to learn more about this and pursue this. So I didn't have any background in behavior analysis. Like I said, my undergraduate degree was in biology. So I had to, I took a handful of undergraduate classes in the department just to learn more about behavior analysis and to prepare myself to apply for the master's program. And then after I had done that, I applied for the master's program and I did my master's in behavior analysis at the University of North Texas, working with Dr. Jesus Rosales Ruiz. And while I was doing my master's, I had the great fortune to get to work with a horse rescue that was here in the North Texas area. The rescue group that I worked with at the time doesn't exist anymore. But it was a small rescue, you know, like a lot of rescue groups. For both horses and for dogs. It was basically a one-person operation, a woman who was very, very passionate about rescuing horses and rehabilitating them. But she knew a lot about rehabilitation and horse nutrition and horse health. She didn't know that much about training, but she saw I was willing to work with the horses. And I'd say at that point, as far as clicker training, I really didn't know that much either. It was a great opportunity for me because she saw that the clicker training and the other things I was doing with the horses was helping the horses have a lot of progress with their training. So she basically let me do whatever I wanted with the horses. So I kind of, for about 4 years, I had a playground with quite a few horses. She had anywhere from about a dozen horses to up to 50 horses at one point while I was working with her. And, you know, we did have some other volunteers who helped, but I was in charge of her training program and managing her volunteers and volunteer program. And really, I would say I was learning a lot in the graduate program, but a lot of what I know about clicker training, you know, the horses taught me, and I got to try things out and see what worked and what didn't work. And working with that many different horses and horses from many different backgrounds really helped me refine my skill. I also have studied some with Alexandra Kurland, and starting in grad school, started going to some of her clinics. So that really helped me to learn how to take what I knew from the traditional training world and what I knew about horse behavior and figure out how do I change things so that I can use clicker training and positive reinforcement training instead to communicate with the horses. One of the other things that I wanted to add that I think had a really big impact on me while I was in graduate school was that I was a member of ORCA, which is the Organization for Reinforcement Contingencies with Animals. And ORCA is a research lab group and also a student organization at the University of North Texas, which is run by Dr. Jesus Rosales Ruiz. So ORCA does research and projects about animal training and animal behavior. And the purpose is to figure out better ways for us to train our animals and interact with them, but also more importantly, to inform the public about these research discoveries. So I got to be in Orca the whole time I was in graduate school and got to work closely with Dr. Jesus Rosales-Ruiz. And I learned so much from him about shaping and training. And it just really helped me improve my skill level working with both the horses and with other species as well. So I got to work some with a small nonprofit that Orca works with, which has exotic animals. So I got to work some with raccoons and Patagonian cavies, macaws, and some other species as well. And that just broadened my knowledge of training and helped make me a better trainer. So I'm really grateful for the time in Orca. And I think that really shaped me and had a big influence on me as a trainer.
And so give us an idea of timelines here. When was this? You said, I said towards the start of the episode that your first portal lesson was about 7 years ago. So when was this in your journey? And bring it and fill in the gap between then and that first portal lesson. What happened? How did you go from that to kind of starting to think about how you can teach humans, and how did this idea of portal arise?
So how did portal come about?
Yeah.
So I started graduate. I was in graduate school from 2010, fall 2010 until 2013. So as some people know, we have the Art and Science of Animal Training Conference every year in North Texas. And next year, 2020, will actually be our 12th annual conference. And at one of the very early conferences, Kay Lawrence was one of our speakers that year. And at a private evening gathering with Dr. Jesus Rosales-Ruiz's graduate students and some of the speakers, Kay Lawrence played Janabacab with us, which is a shaping game that Kay developed to help teach her trainers how to be better shapers and to help them explore what their dogs were learning. And one reason why Kay developed Janabacab was many of your listeners probably have heard of the training game or the shaping game, which is described in Don't Shoot the Dog, where you have one person is the learner and the learner moves around the room and the other person is the trainer and they have the clicker and the trainer tries to shape the learner to do some sort of behavior. However, what Kay has seen was that the training game sometimes works really well and is sometimes a lot of fun, but sometimes as well, especially if you have a trainer who's new to clicker training and you have a learner who's either offering way too many behaviors or who's hesitant and doesn't know what to do, it can quickly spiral out of control where it's not going in the right direction and the trainer doesn't know what to do. And then the trainer's getting frustrated and the learner's getting frustrated. And it's not the good experience that you want everyone to have practicing shaping and learning about shaping. So Kay invented what she calls Janabacab, which uses a clicker, but it uses a collection of small objects. And it's played on a tabletop. And why one of Kay's purposes in using objects on a table is that you can create a much more guided experience. And by doing so, you can help set it up so that even if you have an inexperienced teacher and an inexperienced learner, you can set it up so that it's much more likely that everyone will be successful and everyone will have a positive learning experience. So we were playing Janabacab, and this is my first experience with tabletop shaping games. And I want to tell this particular story of what happened that night, because it really opened my eyes to how powerful these types of tabletop games could be. And both this experience I had and some of the experiences that the other students had showed us that this would be something that we could use as a tool for behavior analysts. So I was not actually... During this teaching encounter, I was not actually the teacher or the learner. One of my friends, who was a fellow graduate student, was the learner. And then there was another woman who was a professional dog trainer who was the teacher. But I was observing, and I did not know what the goal behavior was. And so just like the learner, I was trying to guess what the teacher was teaching the learner to do. And so the teacher started by putting a plastic yellow dinosaur, like a T-Rex, on the table and had the learner touch it or pick it up. And then she put several other objects on the table and kept clicking when the learner would touch the yellow dino. And, you know, the learner would occasionally try touching the other objects and those wouldn't get clicked. So she would go back to just touching the dino. And then the teacher took away the objects and put out a little slinky and some other objects. And the learner touched a few of them and finally touched the slinky and got clicked. And then the teacher put out both the dino and the slinky. And the learner touched the slinky. That didn't work. Touched the dino. That worked. Got a click. Awesome. So this went on for quite some time. But by the end, it was interesting. Even though we weren't talking to each other, the learner and I had both learned the same rule. We knew that the teacher would often put out four or five objects at a time. And if the yellow dino was there, you definitely had to pick the yellow dino. That one trumped everything. If the yellow dino wasn't there, you picked the slinky. If the slinky and the yellow dino both weren't there, you picked the wine cork. And we both had learned this whole list of about 8 or 10 objects of what order they ranked in. So we would know which object would be correct based on what other objects were on the table. And so the teacher said, okay, great. You've learned the behavior. Tell me what you've learned. And my friend said, well, if the yellow dinosaur's there, I pick the dino. If the slinky's there, I pick the slinky. Da, 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 da. And the teacher just sat there and stared. And then, and my friend said, that's not it? And the teacher said, no. And so then she sent both of us away and talked with one of her neighbors and tried to figure out what to do differently and then tried something else. And then I think eventually we ran out of time is what happened. But she eventually spilled the beans and told us what she was trying to teach. She had been trying to teach the concept of height. So the yellow dino was always the tallest object, no matter what objects were out. If it wasn't there, then the slinky was the tallest. But neither my friend nor I had any idea that it was about the concept of height. We thought we had learned the specific objects and the relations between them so that we knew if there were certain combinations of objects, which one to pick. And we had no clue that it had anything to do with the size of the objects. So that experience, well, number one, it really opened my eyes to how sometimes you can think you're training one thing, but your animal or even your human learner may be learning something completely different. And it's powerful to see that, especially when you're training another adult human who has basically the same repertoire or a similar repertoire to you. You know, I knew what height was. I knew taller things and shorter things. But in that context and in the way the shaping steps were arranged and the way different things were reinforced early on, I had no idea that it was about height. I thought instead that it was about the individual objects. And I think, you know, and it may not, in the context of that exercise, maybe it didn't matter because I was getting the right answer each time. So it may have been okay that I had a different rule from the teacher. But, you know, if the teacher was going to use that as a foundation later on to teach something more complex and needed to know that I understood the concept of taller and shorter, then we would have been in trouble. The following school year, I was the president of ORCA. And in the fall, in August, I organized a book discussion group for Don't Shoot the Dog. So there were a group of about 4 students, and we met once a week to read a chapter from Don't Shoot the Dog and discuss it. And we got to the point in the book where she talks about the training game. So we played the training game, but then we thought, then we were talking about the training game, and we said, you know what? What about that Jinabikov stuff that we learned last spring from Kay Lawrence? Let's try playing that too. And so we played that 1 week, and we decided that that was worthwhile. And then we finished reading Don't Shoot the Dog, but we decided we still wanted to keep playing tabletop shaping games. So we started just meeting once a week to play Jinabikov. And so we actually, for that school year, there was a group of four or five of us who met nearly weekly to play tabletop shaping games. And so we were using them to improve our shaping skills, but we also were playing around with seeing, you know, can we take some of the concepts and principles that we're learning about in grad school, you know, chaining and backward chaining, cues, concept learning, schedules of reinforcement. Can we model some of these ideas using a tabletop game? And what we started to see was that the tabletop shaping games could potentially be very powerful, not only for allowing people to practice their shaping skills, which is more what Kay was doing with her trainers, but also for modeling behavior analysis concepts, explaining these concepts to people, and potentially also for investigating research questions. So we started developing a curriculum of exercises. And so that's really how Portal was born. So I guess I should have said this earlier, but Portal is the Portable Operant Research and Teaching Lab. And so it's a tabletop shaping game that's based off of Kay Lawrence's Jinabikov game. And we use a collection of small objects, so it can be just about anything. We now are actually selling portal kits, and people ask me, do I have to have one of your portal kits? And the answer is no. You know, at the beginning, we were playing Portal with things, you know, that we were finding in our junk drawers around the house and whatnot. But, you know, you might have some buttons and a dice and a clothespin, and maybe a little plastic car and a top, and just all sorts of little Legos, blocks, things that the person can play with and interact with. And then we use a clicker, and we also use little blocks as reinforcers. And so how the game is played is that the teacher presents an object or several objects on the table and waits for the learner to interact with them. And when the learner interacts with the objects and does either the correct behavior or an approximation to the correct behavior, the teacher clicks the clicker and gives the learner a block. And then the learner takes the block and puts it in a little dish. And we have the game structured so that the teacher and learner take breaks periodically so that the teacher can assess progress. And so both the teacher and learner can write on data sheets. We also make sure to tell or make sure the teacher and learner know at the beginning that the purpose of the game is for the teacher to try to teach efficiently with minimal errors and with success for the learner. And the learner's goal is to try to learn the behavior and to try to earn as many blocks as they can. But like I said, while I was in grad school, we started playing around with this and seeing what we could do with it. And actually pretty early on in, I think the first one was in 2012, we did three workshops at the annual convention for the Association of Behavior Analysis International, using Portal to teach people about shaping and to illustrate basic concepts. And I think that probably putting together those workshops and doing those workshops really showed us that there really was something here that could be beneficial for the behavior analysis community and that could really help people better understand these concepts and improve their shaping skills and their teaching skills. So it's really interesting because early on, in like the 50s, 60s, you know, even into the 70s and 80s, I would guess, most behavior analysis programs and even psychology programs had rat labs or pigeon labs where the students would get experience working with an animal, going through all of the basic concepts that they were learning about in class. So reinforcement, extinction, schedules of reinforcement, shaping, chaining, putting behaviors on cue. However, now for both money reasons, because those types of labs are very expensive to maintain, and for ethical reasons, you know, keeping dozens or even hundreds of animals just for teaching purposes, most of those labs no longer exist. So there are some schools who still have lab classes like that, but most behavior analysis programs and psychology programs don't have classes like that. So what that means is that, especially at the undergraduate level, and even to a large extent at the graduate level, students are learning about behavior analysis primarily by reading textbooks. You know, maybe the professor shows some videos in class. Maybe they, you know, they, I don't know. But for the most part, they don't have, maybe they work in a setting where they're getting to learn about some of these concepts from their boss. But most students these days don't have the opportunity to get to practice teaching behaviors in a controlled environment with an instructor or someone else who's knowledgeable about the basic principles, advising them and guiding them. And as a result, I think, unfortunately, there's more and more people who are graduating with degrees in psychology or with behavior analysis who really don't know that much about shaping, or who don't know as much about applying these principles as people maybe did in previous generations. So, one thing that we saw early on that we thought was really exciting about Portal was it was a cheap, convenient, easy way for students in the classroom to get to explore all sorts of different concepts and actually see and experience these things in action. And the cool thing about Portal is that they're experiencing these concepts not just as the teacher, but also as the learner. So they get to be the rat, or they get to be the pigeon, and they get to see what that feels like. They get to see what different things, you know, like one lesson that's very powerful is we have a we have lessons that explore like extinction and schedules of reinforcement. And often with our undergraduate students and with our graduate students too, once they experience extinction in Portal from the perspective of the learner, they look at extinction much, much differently than if they've always been on the teacher side of the equation. It just gives them a lot more empathy for their learner and what their learner may be thinking or feeling or experiencing during teaching. So one thing we do during Portal is we have data sheets that both the teacher and the learner use. And the learner, the teacher and learner take breaks every 10 reinforcers. And the learner gets to write down what he or she thinks he or she is doing to earn reinforcement. And also the learner writes down how he or she feels. And some people think that behavior analysts don't care at all about feelings, but we do. You know, feelings and emotions are important because, you know, that gives you a lot of insight to how to into your learner's experience. So at the end of the lesson, the teacher and the learner get to compare data sheets and see each other's data sheets. But it's very interesting at the as the teacher to be able to see what your learner felt at different points throughout the lesson. And that can really help you as a teacher to refine and improve your own teaching skills. So I've kind of been jumping all around, but we did three Portal workshops for the Association of Behavior Analysis. And then after that, I graduated with my degree in 2013. And I started a year or two after that, I started teaching an undergraduate class at University of North Texas as an adjunct. And I taught that class for 6 semesters. I used Portal with my undergraduate students to teach them about shaping and writing shaping plans and all that sorts of stuff related to writing objectives and analyzing their shaping plan and refining it and assessing the progress of their learner. But then at the same time, so I was teaching my students using Portal, but at the same time, they were teaching me how we could refine and improve Portal, because every semester I would, and even during the semester, I would assess how things were going and how we could make it better. And then at the same time, Dr. Jesus Rosales Ruiz and I were starting to do Portal workshops. So I was working closely with him as well. And we were figuring out how to develop and refine these lessons in our curriculum so that we could use Portal even better as a teaching tool to teach people about shaping and as a way to teach people about the basic principles of behavior analysis. And so that's kind of how Portal evolved. I'm not sure if you want to ask anything. I know I feel like I've said a lot, but I get excited when I start talking about this stuff.
And that's what this show is all about, pretty much. You are the perfect guest, Mary. So 7 years ago, you did your first class. And since then, mm-hmm. the idea has been spreading. People have made videos of their tabletop games or their Portal games, and they've shared them online. And people have said, what's that? And people have gone to conferences and they've played Portal in different conferences. And now, though, in 2019, do you want to share the exciting news about what is available for people all around the world that might want to learn more about Portal?
So we actually have a Portal lab manual that we have just published this fall. It's co-written between myself and Dr. Jesus Rosales Ruiz. And this is the manual contains the curriculum that we've developed over the past handful of years. So we've actually been working on writing the manual for several years now. And it's about 200 pages. It contains almost 50 exercises. And the exercises are the ones that we've developed in our undergraduate classes, in our graduate class, and then also the ones we use in our professional workshops. And what we try to do in the manual and what we've developed with Portal over the past years is we really use Portal for 3 purposes. So we use it to teach people the basic concepts of behavior analysis and use it to illustrate these concepts, which is really useful because there's a difference between reading about backward and forward chaining and then getting to go experience them and see them in action, or reading about different types of schedules of reinforcement, but then getting to go and actually experience them. So by playing Portal and by working through these exercises, it really helps these concepts and ideas come alive. And I think it helps people understand them a lot better. So we use Portal to, like I said, to teach basic concepts, but then also as a tool that people can use to improve their shaping skills. So first and foremost, it's a teaching tool. But then once you get some experience with Portal, we also use it for what we call inquiry. And so this is one of the parts that our students really enjoy. So if you have some experience with Portal and you feel comfortable using it, you may have an idea about something. And this might be something you've seen with your animals and you're not quite sure why something works that way. Or it may be something you've heard someone say, or a rule that someone's told you need to follow while you're training. And you can actually take Portal and take your idea and play with it and use Portal to model different ideas, model different scenarios, see how different things work. And then based on what you learn, you can actually take that and use it to improve your actual training. And then finally, we use Portal for research projects, which it's a really great for research because a lot of research equipment is expensive. It's hard for students to get access to it. It may also, a lot of research these days is done using computerized equipment. So you have to have programming skills or have access to someone who has those skills. But Portal is a collection of trinkets purchased at the dollar store. And we're using it to do pretty powerful and interesting research projects. So I actually did my master's thesis using Portal. And since then, we've had several other students do research projects using Portal. So it can be used for a variety of different purposes. Oh, I completely forgot what the question was, but I think we were talking about the lab manual, weren't we?
Do you know, when we caught up for the pre-conversation for this podcast, I said the goal is to get you to passion talk, Mary, and what that looks like is you saying to me, Ryan, I forgot what the question was.
So our purpose with the manual is to take what we do in our classes and put it in a book form so that people all over the world can use it without having to, you know, without having to come and be a student at the University of North Texas.
And I've ordered mine, so I believe that you're going to pick them up from the printer in the next day or two. And then,
yes. Well, and by the time people are listening to this, they will be available. And I'll throw this into, we were talking about this before we started recording, but the number one question we've been getting is, will there be an ebook available? And we are working on making an ebook available as well, just because we realize that depending on where people are in the world, it may be expensive or difficult for them to get a copy of it from us.
I'm sure there's lots of happy listeners at the moment. One thing we talk about here on the podcast is ripples and how the little things you do can kind of spread out into the world and have pretty big results. I would say that the ripple effect of your releasing of this manual is pretty huge, though. Share with the audience, if you can, tell me if you can't, some information you shared with me before we started recording about how many copies you've sold before you've even made it. This is in the pre-purchase, so you haven't even like officially made it standard purchase.
Yeah, so I'm going later this week to pick up the manuals that we've ordered and had printed, and so far already we've sold about 300 copies. So we're really excited by how many people are interested in it, and we're hoping people will take it, invite all their friends over, and start playing regularly. And, you know, like what I was talking about earlier, if you are interested in playing Portal and you can find a couple of friends who are willing to get together regularly or even semi-regularly, it can be really powerful for improving your shaping skills. I think that my second year of graduate school, when I had that close group of friends and we were playing shaping games with each other basically every week, I think that really helped improve my shaping skills and my ability to analyze what was going on in the moment and make and adjust shaping plans. So now if you don't have other trainer friends, that's fine too. I regularly get my mom to play Portal with me. So, and she's not interested in being the teacher, but she's happy to be the learner and she'll let me try out different things and test different things and practice shaping different behaviors with her. So, you know, as long as you have a friend or family member, you can play some Portal.
And where does one go to buy one of these Portal manuals online?
So you can go to our website, which is behaviorexplorer.com. And the manuals are available for sale there. And then we also have some other resources and articles and videos. And our plan is over the next few months to continue adding more articles and videos and other things that will help people, more example videos of Portals that will help people as they're playing on their own, especially if they don't have, you know, access to an instructor or someone else to help them out.
Wonderful. And a lot of you listening might have seen some of the videos and blog posts that Mary's been putting out recently. Two episodes, three episodes ago, we discussed your training duration by using a chain with Dr. Susan Freeman. So you can go listen to me and Susan talk about that in episode 100 of this show. And so that's been incredibly popular in and of itself. I think it got shared within the Animal Training Academy members group like every day for like 2 weeks or something. Maybe not that much, but it was shared a lot is the point I'm trying to make. Hey, we're nearly running out of time, but one thing that I don't think we've kind of dived into in any depth thus far, and something that you told me that you wanted to talk about today in relation to the conversation so far in the Portal manual and Portal in general, is errorless learning. Did you want to just touch on that quickly before we do wrap up?
Let's just touch on that quickly. And I think I had another story I wanted to tell, which may be a good way to talk about that. So one thing we try to do in Portal is we try to help. Well, we try, when we're specifically working on shaping exercises, we want the teacher to do the shaping and the teaching in a way that helps the learner succeed and that sets the learner up so that they're learning quickly, efficiently, and with minimal errors. And we try to set things up, too, in the Portal manual and in our curriculum so that as you're learning Portal and you're learning about shaping, that you're doing that in a way where you can be successful doing that too. And so one way that we help the teacher in Portal and that also helps the learner, whether in Portal or in any other situation, is we try to teach the teacher how to see the components that make up bigger behaviors and how to break down those components and systematically teach them. And then maybe systematically, there's multiple parts, assemble them back together. One thing we do in the Portal manual is we have a series of what we call shaping foundation lessons. So there's six of those that help teach the teacher how to be a better shaper. But then by using those skills, you can use those skills both in Portal and in other situations to help the learner learn faster and with fewer errors. So one of those lessons is what we call transferring actions. And so this is basically the idea that, say, I'm just going to give you a silly Portal example. Say I wanted someone to I wanted someone to take a giraffe and I wanted them to spin it on the table as if it was a little toy top. Okay. So I could give someone a giraffe and try to shape that behavior, and it probably would be messy and they would try different things at first. They might pick up the giraffe, they might pop it across the table, they might turn it upside down, but it probably would take a while to where I could get them to actually spin it. However, if I gave the person a toy top, I could pretty easily get the person to spin the toy top. And then after they had spun the toy top several times, and I was clicking for that behavior and reinforcing it, I could trade out the top and maybe give them another round object that looked kind of like the top, get them spinning that, and then trade it out for a few other objects, and then give them the giraffe. And what are they going to do? They've spun three or four objects. Probably the first thing they'll do with the giraffe is they'll spin it. So it's this idea that we can teach an action with an object or in an environment where it seems very intuitive or very easy for the learner to do that action. And then after the learner has that action in their repertoire and we've been reinforcing it, so it's kind of a hot behavior, we can either switch out the object or we can gradually change the environment until they're doing that same action in an environment that originally might have seemed very difficult or very counterintuitive. So this is a lesson that's fairly early on in the Portal manual. And I'll tell you a story that relates to this. I don't teach this undergraduate class anymore, but I taught an undergraduate class for about 3 years at the University of North Texas. And the students had to do a project where they picked some sort of motor skill and taught it to several other adult human learners. So maybe something like tying a necktie or changing a bike tie or tying a line tying a hook on a fishing line, something that they knew how to do, but they could find several other people who didn't know how to do that. And they had to practice shaping the behavior, but they could use words or modeling or all the regular things that we use when we're teaching human learners usually. So I had a student one semester, and she was going to teach her roommate how to put the harness on her little dog. The problem was it was a little squirmy dog, and the roommate was a little bit afraid of the dog. So she came to me one day and she was trying to figure out how she was going to set this up so that it wouldn't be stressful for the dog and the dog would be happy, but also so that it wouldn't be stressful and so that her roommate would be comfortable during the process and so that everyone could just be happy. So she was sitting there kind of frustrated, brainstorming with me. And then all of a sudden she goes, "I can use transferring actions." And she said, "I'm going to teach my roommate how to put the harness on a stuffed animal. And once she understands how to put the harness on and how to do the buckles and does everything like that and feels really confident with all of the motions and actions to do that, then I'll have her try it with the real dog." And this is a undergraduate student majoring in behavior analysis, but who had zero animal training experience. And minimal experience working with or teaching human learners either. And through playing Portal and through having this idea of one way to teach things is using transferring actions, having that in her mind, she came up with this way to teach this. You know, to me as a dog trainer, it kind of seems, you know, have the person practice with a stuffed dog first and then try it with the real dog. But she came up with this all on her own, and she was so proud of herself. And she went and she tried it with her roommate, got her roommate where the roommate could figure out all the buckles and put the harness on and do it with a stuffed dog. I think she actually did it with two different stuffed animals and then did some things to get her roommate more comfortable with the dog, and pretty quickly had her roommate putting the actual harness on the actual dog. But in a way where if she had just approached the problem head on and just given the harness to her roommate with the little dog there and the roommate feeling uncomfortable because she didn't know how the harness worked and she was a little bit afraid of the dog, it could have been really stressful for everybody involved. And not only was it a good experience for everyone involved, but she was able to use what she had learned and practiced in Portal to make this teaching situation more errorless for her human learner and for the dog who was part of the situation.
That's an awesome story. We love stories here on the show, so thank you for sharing that one with us. We are sadly now at the end of the episode, but there is one last thing that I'd like to ask all guests, and I'm really curious to hear your answer to this question, and let's maybe focus on Portal and where you see all of us going. What do you see for Portal and what Portal can teach us and how it can help us as an industry move forward, how it can help us professionals become better at shaping and better at teaching others shaping? Where do you see this all going over the next 5 to 10 years?
I'm really excited to see where things will go now that we have our lab manual out. I really hope that people will take Portal and start using it with their friends, using it with their colleagues, using it with their students to explore different ideas and concepts and use it to improve their skills and to teach their students and to, you know, make the world a better place for all of our animals. One thing that I think is really, you know, several things about Portal that I think are really cool is, like, we posted the videos that you mentioned about the duration chaining. And that was just something that we had been talking a lot, or I'd been talking a lot with people last spring about duration and different ways to build duration. And so I thought, you know, I wonder if I could do this. And then I'd gone and modeled it in Portal and modeled it in several different situations. But now that we've posted those videos, I've gotten lots of emails from people, and you can go, actually, if you go visit the blog post and read all the comments, there's some people have left some really interesting stories in the comments about, and often what people have told me is, I love those videos because I saw that when I'm teaching such and such behavior, I may already kind of be using that concept, but the video helped me see it as a bigger, broader concept rather than, you know, I was thinking of it before just as the specific procedure I was using. So I guess what I'm trying to say is I hope we can use Portal as a way to take things that might be little, that are kind of ideas we have in the animal training world or in the human training world. Can we take them into Portal? Can we refine them? Can we play with them? Can we explore how they work and how to make them better? And then can we take them back to the animal training world and then take them back to Portal and back to the animal training world and go back and forth and just make things better and better and more refined? I think Portal as well can be really valuable for, like we were talking about earlier, for giving people empathy for their learners. We had unfortunately, people have all sorts of weird ideas about shaping. We had a workshop about a year and a half ago, and about halfway through, one of the participants said, I get it. The goal is to make it easy for our learner to learn. So this person had heard shaping, their idea of shaping was, you know, this complex guessing game where it's complicated and I'm not quite sure what all they thought, but they saw through Portal that when we, by setting up your shaping plan the right way, and then by adjusting it as you go along, you can make the learning experience where your animal can be successful and can be happy and confident, whether that's an animal or whether that's a human learner in Portal. So I hope that Portal can help people really see how they can refine their shaping skills, and in turn, that can make them better teachers for their animals and make their animals more successful and more confident and more happy about the training process.
There's some pretty awesome goals. I kind of feel like this is a really important moment in our community, the release of this manual. And I'm envisioning as you're talking that in 2019, my guests come on the show and say, I was using traditional methods and then I read Don't Shoot the Dog and then everything changed. Maybe in 10 years, people are going to be saying I was doing this, that, and the other, and then I got my hands on a Portal manual, and then everything changed. I feel like it's potentially one of those moments, Mary.
I hope so. You know, I hope it's really, over the past years, I've played hundreds of hours of Portal, and I think it really has made me a better shaper. So I hope it can help other people too.
So exciting. Hey, Mary, this has been so much fun. Any final words before we end up today?
I don't think so. I think we've covered a lot. I've really enjoyed this. And, you know, now that the Portal manual is out there, Jesus and I want people to use it. But we also really are interested in knowing how people are using it and knowing, you know, what comes out of it. So, you know, if you get a copy of the manual or if you're playing Portal with friends or at a workshop somewhere, get in touch with me. I'd love to hear how it's changing what you're doing with your animals. I'd love to hear, you know, even if you're stuck or you have questions, I'd love to hear that. I'm happy to talk with you. We want everyone to see the power of Portal. So if there's things we can do to support people, we definitely, definitely reach out and we'd love to hear from you.
I think I've just chosen the name of this episode. It's going to be called The Power of Portal. Everything we've talked about in the show today, we will link in the show notes for this episode, so it's nice and easy for you, the listener, to go and find. Mary, like I said, this has been a ton of fun. So from myself and on behalf of everyone listening, once again, thank you so much for making time to come and hang out with us here at Animal Training Academy today. It's really appreciated. Thank you.
It's been a lot of fun. Thanks.
We do, of course, really appreciate all of you tuning in today as well. And if you have enjoyed this episode and you were interested in carrying on the conversation about working with our animals in the most positive, funnest, choice-rich ways, then as mentioned at the start of this episode, the Animal Training Academy community is waiting for you. Head on over to www.animaltrainingacademy.com and click on the membership button in the main menu to learn more about what members are describing as the Netflix social media platform for behavior geeks. There's something there for absolutely everyone, and we're looking forward to having you join the tribe. That's it for this episode, though. We're going to wrap it up there. Thanks again so much, everyone, for listening. You'll hear from us again soon.